This is Black Knight Meditations on WSCA 106.1 FM. Black Death, Speed, Thrash, Gothic, Doom, Shred, Power, Prog, Folk, and Traditional Metal. Send your requests and your feedback to bnmradio@live.com. Broadcast and interviews I've done over the years are posted at blacknightmeditations.com. Speaking of interviews, how about we do one right now? Let's do an interview right now. Joe Stump, guitar player and musician extraordinaire, solo artist, member of several bands, and instructor at Berklee College of Music, has a new album out now called The Dark Lord Rises. Of course it's called The Dark Lord Rises. That makes the most sense in the world. You should call a Joe Stump album The Dark Lord Rises. Joe, thanks a lot for calling into WSCA tonight. How's it going?
I'm good, good. I live a charmed life. Thanks for having me.
Charms a life. That's all. Well, yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Good deal, so I can't complain.
That's the spirit. I'm happy to have the Shred Lord himself, Joe Stump, on the air right now. I appreciate it. And, you know, first of all, where are you calling from right now? Because it's Friday night. You should be out raising hell somewhere. Where are you right now? What are you up to?
I'm just home hanging back. I mean, I play fairly regularly, you know, between all the things that I do. So whether it's regional shows, and I just came back from doing that, the, you know, guitar cruise, the Axis and Anchors thing. So, So if it's a weekend night and I don't have a show and I'm not out, you know, on the road or something like that, I'm happy to hang back. So, you know, because it's a bit of a rarity.
You are a busy guy between all the bands you're in, the solo releases, the teaching and the shows and cruises of all things. Yeah, you are a busy guy. The new album is out now. It's called The Dark Lord Rises. We're going to get to that, of course. We'll obviously talk about that. But before we get to the new record, let's talk about things that you don't seem to get to discuss much when you do all these interviews that you've done over the years. Why don't we focus first on things that don't have anything to do with your guitar technique, your gear, not your teaching at Berklee, not other musicians, not those typical topics people tend to ask you. Let's talk about you, you know, just you, Joe. No music, no guitars, none of that. And I know you've said before publicly that you're pretty much focused on music in your life and you don't have much in the way of hobbies, but you got to tell us fans about you outside of music. Like, what TV shows do you binge watch? You know, what movies do get you to go out to the theater? You know, are you a foodie? Do you cook a lot? Who the hell is Joe Stump?
Those are all cool questions. I wouldn't necessarily refer to myself as foodie, but I do enjoy cooking, and you know, my mother, I'm born and raised in New York, so my mother's side of the family's Brooklyn Italian, so I'm fairly versed as far as like Italian food goes, but I make all kinds of things, and it's kind of fun, so that's like something that I enjoy outside of guitar. It's not like I'm like, you know, constantly scouring the internet for recipes, or I got a huge thing of cookbooks, but you know, that's kind of like a fun thing to do. I mean, everybody's got to eat, so you know, why not make something good?
Do you have a favorite? And, do you have a favorite thing you make? Like your favorite thing that you like to eat that you make yourself, not that somebody else does for you, but you do for yourself?
There's a bunch of different things I like to eat, and you know, Italian food, I could name like, you know, a half dozen dishes that I like to make, but I mean, I make Italian food, I make Indian food. It's just, you know, those would be the two things that I do the most. I'm trying to vary up my repertoire, but I make all kinds of stuff. It depends what's laying around or what I got to get rid of in the house or whatever, you know.
Oh, right, cleaning out the refrigerator and the cabinets, right. So does Joseph ever make a trip through the drive-thru? Are you a burger and fries guy too?
No, unless it's like a necessity, I try to stay away from that kind of thing. Granted, if it's late night and, you know, a lot of times I'm like a guy that doesn't eat before the show, I'll always eat after the show, so... If that's all that's around, you know, I mean, who doesn't like to eat burgers, you know, but it's the kind of thing, if you get a steady diet of it, of course, it's going to take its toll on you, so.
All right, so what about, let's say you got a Netflix account, what do you spend a day watching if you're at home in bed, maybe you're feeling a little under the weather, what do you like to watch?
I don't have I'm like old school, so sadly I'm still on cable. I don't have Netflix, but But I mean, I have like various things that I like to watch. Like there's a new show on Showtime that's called Billions, you know, about like that I like, and then another Showtime show, Shameless, I've watched like since its inception. And there's a new show on HBO called Vinyl that's awesome. It's about, you know, rock in the 70s and you know, a guy that's a record exec in the 70s and stuff. And Martin Scorsese, you know, directs it and produces it along with Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger's son's in it. You know, it's a great series and very, very cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it.
I watch things like that, and you know, of course, I have like favorite movies that I like and all that kind of stuff.
So, when you say favorite movies, we're talking like when you were a kid, things you saw at the theater as a kid that are still your favorites today. What are those?
They kind of range. Like, you know, I can like pick like different movies that impacted me where I definitely remember seeing them. You know, whether it was when I was a kid or whatever, whether it's, you know, I remember seeing Jaws in the movie when I was little, when it came out and saw it in the theater, that was like pretty intense. And, or, you know, I remember seeing some of M. Night Shyamalan's movies, you know, whether it was Signs or, you know, The Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
or,
great movies.
And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Martin Scorsese, you know, so of course, you know, whether it's Goodfellas or Raging Bull or Casino or, you know, The Departed or any of his films, and Quentin Tarantino, you know, the usual suspects, Tarantino.
Right,
you know?
Of course. So what were you like as a kid? Did you ever go through that typical kid phase, like I want to be an astronaut or a baseball player? What were you like as a little kid?
I was really into sports when I was a kid. So you know, I played baseball and played in you know, YMCA and Little League and all that, and played basketball, and then played football, baseball, and basketball, you know, early on. You know, my first year in high school, like 9th, 10th grade, but then, you know, then that's when I first started. Then I got into guitar and, you know, and you know,
it's been downhill ever since.
Kind of, you know, that all stopped, and then there was nothing else I wanted to do.
So for your newer and older fans, since we're already going there, tell us something about you, not related to your music, that those of us who do know about you, something that would shock us. Like, do you have political aspirations? You know, you want to run for public office? Or, I mean, when you're in Boston, do you only drive a motor scooter? You know, something our fans don't know. Are you an ABBA fan like I am?
Am I a what?
Are you an ABBA fan? I am.
I do love ABBA.
Good, awesome, yeah, I love them.
Yes, I mean, I'm a huge ABBA fan, actually.
Me too, dude. Same here, man. I read books, I own the vinyl, the CDs, I read everything. I love ABBA. Cool, that's good to hear. Do you drive?
Yes, I've seen them, you know, I've never seen the Mamma Mia play, but I've seen the movie, you know, and that's like one of those movies, if it's on, and I'm clicking around. If it's on, I'll leave it on, you know. And,
oh, it's fun.
And I mean, I think everybody in the movie did a great job. And of course,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you, like ABBA, they had wonderful melodies and stuff, and you know, great music. It doesn't matter, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know how it's showcased. I mean, great melody is great melody, and you know, you certainly can't beat that.
Yeah, a great song is a great song, and they're one of those acts that they got better as they went along, and even at the end of their career, like their last album in '81 called The Visitors, best thing they ever did. I mean, there's songs on there about prostitution, nuclear war, Soviet dissidents. I mean, it's amazing music. Great, great band. Awesome. And speaking of, since I was saying, do you have any plans for, you know, political aspirations? Hey, we're in the middle of a presidential campaign. Are you a political guy at all?
I'm not, you know, granted I have, you know, certain views on certain things, but, you know, I try not to, you know, get into that discussion with people because, like, some people are very, very passionate about it.
Yeah, you could say
you
that.
Know, they're like, you know, breathing down your throat about like certain things, whether, you know, whatever it is. So I kind of try to hang back and keep that kind of thing to myself, you know, although it's very, you know, obviously anybody that's watching any of the, especially the Republican debates, it's to say it's very interesting would be an understatement.
Yeah, and you know, and I actually was not going to ask you your personal political beliefs. I'm thinking more along the lines of, do you see yourself involved in an elected position? Not necessarily your beliefs, but like, is that, I was trying to look for things that fans who followed you over your career may be surprised to know about you. Like, wow, I never figured him for a guy that would want to be in the, you know, the state or Senate or anything like that. But
no, I'm kind of consumed with what I do. So I'm kind of, I wouldn't say, of course I'm aware of everything, but I'm like very, to me, I'm still eating and breathing and sleeping guitar, so there really isn't much else. And I have like things I like to do in my spare time, but you know, there's not a ton of that. So I'm very consumed guitar wise. So.
Well, I'm going to be personal here for a moment because this is how I discovered you and your music. I first learned about you, and it was in a metal magazine back in the mid-90s. It probably was Metal Maniacs, which I would check out all the metal mags back, of course, in the 80s and in the 90s. And I think there was a distro that was selling CDs, and I saw the album titles Guitar Dominance and Night of the Living Shred. And I saw those titles and thought, oh, God, I've got to hear these records. I mean, it was the mid-90s, and you just didn't see those kind of album titles anywhere. And I was unaware of who you were. I hadn't heard the music. But just based on the titles alone, I had to hear them, you know, because I grew up listening to instrumental guitar in the 80s and the early 90s, and I still do. And because in the mid-90s, you just didn't see or hear much instrumental music like that. And it was seemingly so blatantly defiant of the times. You know, I could identify with that in the midst of, like, the alternative 90s when metal was a dirty word and no one played guitar solos. You know, I grew my hair to my waist and I wore my metal shirts. I went to Overkill shows. You know, blatant defiance of the loser culture. But it was legit and true, you know, not just a middle finger to MTV and Rolling Stone. And I kind of got you, you know. I saw those album titles. I'm like, this guy, I think he and I are on the same wavelength here, and he's putting out records. How awesome is this? I mean, did you feel that same way back then?
Yes. Well, I really wasn't concerned. That's one thing that's somewhat cool about the whole guitar thing, that, you know, there's always going to be a niche audience for that type of thing. I mean, trends will come and go.
True.
But I mean, for me, it kind of helped me really kind of, I got my name out more so because I was like one of the few new guys like making records at that time. So people thought, what is this guy out of his mind? He's making these types of records during the height of the grunge period. But people that really, you know, were interested in that type of thing and you know, really wanted to hear those type of things and really wanted to listen. I mean, everybody else was still doing things, whether it was Michelangelo Badio or Yngwie or, you know, any of the, you know, founding fathers of shred guitar and the pioneers and the guys that wrote the book. I mean, they were still making records. Granted, you know, their popularity wasn't what it was like, you know, in previous years during that dark period, as everybody likes to say, it was for guitar playing, you know.
And there was plenty of it out there. It's just it wasn't in the mainstream anymore. And that's why when I saw this distro carrying your music, I'm like, I got to hear this, because I knew of the obvious ones, but I wanted to hear more. And there you were. I'm like, perfect. This has got to be great. You know, and I just I wanted to point that out, that even back then, like you said, it was, you know, this guy's got to be out of his mind doing stuff like this. That's what some of us were looking for. You know, we needed that. And I'm so glad to discover your music. And speaking of music, you know, let's just go ahead and get to the new album. You're out promoting The Dark Lord Rises. It's out there now. My current favorite Joe Stump tune is actually on this album, Out for Blood. This is I do love the new record. There are a couple songs I'm not a big fan of, but everything else I love. And of the ones I love, Out for Blood, it works the most for me. So let's talk about this song. How did you compose it? Did you like have a song title and then build a song around the title? Or did you just throw a title that you had in there against a song you had already written? How did you work up Out for Blood?
Oh, well, you know, I wrote the track and everything, and that's like a, you know, that track, particular track, it kind of like sums up a good, you know, it's kind of like a good little microcosm of like, hey, what does this guy sound like? Well, listen to this track.
Exactly.
You know, because you have
exactly.
Like some of the power metal thing, and then you, you have this kind of dark, evil kind of you have the neoclassical thing, obviously, but it's a little meaner, it's a little more evil, and it's a little heavier. So, you know, blending all of the things that I love, whether it's whether it's the obvious thing they influence, or I also love, like, you know, Hank Sherman from Merciful Fate, and, you know, Dennis Sherman and you know, Andy LaRocque from King Diamond. So it, you know, so you got some of that kind of vibe in there on some of the darker solo type of things on that track. But what was I going to say? As far as the title goes, I usually title the tracks after it's, you know, that's the last thing I do. Like, I write the tunes, and then they kind of evoke something, and then you know, the title kind of comes to me. And the Out for Blood thing is, I was playing a live show, and I'm like throwing my guitar around, and, you know, rubbing it against the stacks and throwing it in the air or whatever. And I ended up cutting I think it was my index finger on my pick hand open, and then I was bleeding all over the place, all over, like, you know, one of my straps, all, you know, it was like a cleanup on aisle 5 kind of thing. because when I'm out there doing damage live, you know, it's like the gloves are off. So that's kind of like how I came upon the title.
And that, what you were saying about it's got a little bit of everything that you do, and I think that's part of what stands out for me on this song, is that I heard it, I'm like, it's got so many different things about your music that I like all in one, and I'm like, that's perfect. You know, it's got some catchy riffing, of course, the soloing, it's got that mid-paced vibe, you know, it's just got a little bit of everything, and it's kind of like a quote-unquote quintessential Joe Stump song. It's just so memorable. I love that tune. You know, you mentioned you compose a song, and then you'll figure out a title after the song. I mean, do you ever have, like, just some song titles that you had for something, didn't use, and then you realize, okay, the song I finished up last night, wow, this makes me think of this old song title I've had around for 20 years. You know, do you ever work it out like that, or does it ever go in reverse? Like, you do have a title and you think, man.
No, usually it's just like the music comes first, and then, like, something will kind of, you know, evoke some kind of, you know, thought or whatever. Or the other thing is, it's not like I'm all that deep. I just started to think of something that sounds like extremely cool, and, you know.
That's awesome, though.
And you know, I mean, at this point, I have, like, a certain responsibility with the names of my earlier records. I just can't call the tunes and the names of the records just standard type things. It's got to be somewhat, you know, somewhat pretentious, and also, you know, have that kind of same vibe and theme to everything.
And I can appreciate you, you know, wanting to honor what you've been doing and what you've started all those years ago, and what got a lot of the old school fans into you all those years ago, and keeping that up as opposed to what you could and have every right to do, which is just move on to something else or whatever you feel at the moment. So I can really respect that. I appreciate that. Before the new album was released, I was reading some of your comments about the album that was not out yet, so I wanted to get a sense of what to expect. And you'd mentioned that there was going to be a black metal-ish type song on the album. And, of course, me being into all the heavier sides of metal, specifically black metal, I was super psyched to hear this. So I checked the song titles to see if I could figure out what song the record it would be. And I just knew it had to be Staring Into the Abyss. It seemed to make sense. And, you know, I love this song. So how intentional was that black metal influence on this one? Did you set out to do that? Did it just happen and you realized, wow, this has got a black metal vibe? Or did you go on that? Did you go that way intentionally?
Well, I had, like, the certain parts that I composed that were, you know, that certain guitaristic elements of black metal. So I wanted to try, and I, whether it's the really fast kind of tremolo picking or that kind of,
right,
that kind of chordal kind of thing and all that. So it intentionally started out as a incorporating those elements and then mixing it in with, like, you know, the standard, like, the types of power metal things I do. And, of course, like, some of the more, you know, evil kind of scalar kind of, somewhat ominous or demonic kind of, you know, melodic kind of ideas. And then, of course, with the shred thing.
So at the beginning of the broadcast tonight, I played a song that has my all-time favorite riff by a band called Destiny's End. And I like your songs that are my favorites tend to be the ones that it seemed to be more riff oriented, like we were mentioning Out for Blood and like especially The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I like those riff oriented songs. So when you're composing music for your albums, do you actually have a treasure trove of riffs, you know, ripe for the picking, no pun intended, you know, that you have written over the years?
I usually just start playing something and then it kind of like all falls together. Like Out for Blood, I had that intro riff. And, you know, the whole first part of the track all together. But then some of the other, you know, neoclassical single note stuff that's in there didn't come until, like, a few months later. So a lot of times it's not like I'll have a riff and then all of a sudden I'll play, like, a single note thing that marries to that riff perfectly. Whether sometimes it could be right after I compose it. Sometimes it could be, like, weeks or a month or two after I compose it.
Wow. So there's no Joe Stump vault, per se, of all this stuff that you've written over the years you just haven't gotten around to using for your songs?
I have plenty of other stuff laying around. But usually I'm always playing, so if I'm coming up with something, it's usually going to be better than something that I've got laid away stuff. I mean, I have a couple instrumental things that didn't make it onto the new record that I know are pretty strong. So, you know, things like that I'll kind of like revisit again. And, you know, maybe use it, or if I'm doing a vocal record and I want to put an instrumental on it, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's one or two things that, like I said, that I didn't have on the new record that I might end up using again, revisiting. But usually, I'm on it all the time, so...
All right. I want to ask you about a few of your older tunes, and you tell us anything about them, whatever comes to mind, whether it's inspiration or if there's a hidden meaning, if you have nightmares of recording these songs, anything that comes to mind about these older tunes of yours, even if you've forgotten how to play them. A track I like is Eastern Beast.
Yes, well, Eastern Beast I remember very distinctly from Speed Metal Messiah. And I remember I was playing the very little intro that's very kind of like subdued is like very, you know, obviously anybody that knows anything about me knows that I love Ritchie Blackmore.
Of course
I love Yngwie too, and I love Ritchie Blackmore, and it's no secret who like some of my favorite players are. So it's got this very heavy like Blackmore kind of vibe to the beginning of it. You know, this very, you know, kind of subdued kind of Eastern sounding phrasing thing. And I remember I was recording it with Mike Vassero, who, you know, Mike sang in Loudness, and he sang with Yngwie, and he sang in Obsession, you know, great, old school metal band, and you know, great singer and a great guy. And I was recording and Mike was engineering the record, and I was playing that little subdued part in the beginning of the track, and you know, Mike has like, you know, back then Mike's kids were young and they were always running around the house, you know, like causing all kinds of trouble, and as I'm tracking that little bit, he's like screaming at them and they're all running around. So that's one of the things that comes to mind when I was recording the track.
That's an interesting thing to think of when one of your older tunes, kids running around and getting yelled at. It's very cool. It's not metal, but it's very metal in a way.
It was a really good take, and I was kind of like semi-laughing because, you know, he had like three kids, but they were like a gang of 10, you know, so it was very cool.
That's cool. All right, how about Pharaoh's Delight?
Pharaoh's Delight, that, you know, I mean, the blueprint for that, you know, I've had like many, many tunes like that on my record, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, Eastern Beast or, you know, like, I'm trying to think of that, you know, tracks, you know, I've had like tracks on that on like all my records.
Yep.
And the blueprint for that is that sludgy kind of heavy kind of, you know, evil Eastern kind of slow Yngwie-esque kind of thing. So that's kind of where that comes from.
And,
you know, along with like this Hungarian minor thing, which is a very Blackmore-esque kind of thing.
Well, it kind of leads into the Dance of Kashani, which was a song that stood out for me a few years back when you put out the record. I gravitated toward that song. What are your memories of the Dance of Kashani? Because you still play this one live.
The Dance of Kashani was the first tune I wrote for Virtuosic Vendetta. And I remember it very distinctly. And I remember playing all the riffs and playing, it came together like very fast, like almost the entire track when I was composing it. And once again, that type of thing, like a very, Blackmore influence kind of, in fact, like in the outro solo of the Dance of Kashani, I play like a bunch of the solo from Rainbow's Gates of Babylon note for note, as like a little quote to anybody that's paying attention. And, which I've done on like my records before, I'll have like a tiny piece of like a thing in a solo that's kind of like a tip of the hat.
I love that.
One of my favorite players or one of my heroes.
I love it. So, people do that.
And I remember, and people say, oh, what is that song about? How did you come up with the titles? And it was funny, the guy that played drums on the record, he was dating some Indian girl, and her name was Kashani, so that's how I kind of, I mean, it didn't last very long, but that's kind of, I thought her name was kind of exotic, and that's the kind of the way I worked it into the title.
Hey, wherever you get inspiration from, it can come from anywhere. One more older tune, a little bit more of a reflective piece that you call Never Forgotten.
That was really nice the way it came together. Like I had the chordal thing on that particular piece all worked out, and then I, like all of the single note stuff, I just played off the top of my head off the cuff, and I did it all on a nylon string, and it was a nylon string where it was a traditional classical guitar where we had it mic'd up in the studio, and I remember having to take all my, my bracelets and rings off because they were like making noise, with the condenser
remember. Yeah. Does the title of that one have any special meaning, or did it just fit the music?
Well, I dedicated it to my grandparents on my mother's side, who I was very close to, especially my grandmother. So that's kind of where the title came from. And my family, when they read that, they were, very touched and all that. So it was like, oh, Joey, that's so nice.
Your fans know, of course, you're an instructor at Berklee in Boston. But do you ever teach beginners or those who are not far along in their learning of the guitar?
I don't do a ton of private lessons outside of Berklee. I do some outside lessons, but most of the players that study with me they don't have to be like, granted I have players that are super advanced and very accomplished players, but I also have, players that like younger players that are like maybe 16, 17 that study with me outside of Berklee. Not a ton of them, but a few that are, just getting going as far as the metal thing and the shred thing goes. But no, I really don't, for someone that's just a beginner, they're much better off like kind of getting a bit more not that it's like, I do not teach beginners, but I mean, it's the kind of thing where you're much better off getting like a lot of the basics, something that's a bit cheaper and a bit more affordable, and then getting more out of when you're studying with somebody that could show you some more advanced level stuff.
Have you ever been faced with a student of yours you just couldn't get through to that for whatever reason, it just, your instruction just, it wasn't having any effect. Maybe they just weren't picking anything up and, you had to recommend they take up the tuba instead.
I wouldn't go that far, but of course, there's different players. Like the one thing about metal players in general, or, you know, they're all individuals, so people understand things in different ways. So you might have to explain something to some, you know, you might explain something to some, to one person one way, but you might have to paint it like, you know, slightly different to get it through to somebody else. So a lot of that's just like dealing with individuals, but every, you know, granted there's some players that advance faster, and it all depends on how much work you're going to do. You know, there's no substitute for elbow grease, as they say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Either you're in the, as I like to say, you're either in the game or on the bench.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
You know, if you're serious about metal guitar and you're eating, breathing, and sleeping it and really want to play it, then you're on it all the time. If not, then, you know, lots of luck, because plenty of other guys are, you know?
All right. Joe, what are your websites? How do fans get in touch with you?
I still got a .com site, and, you know, of course, there's a Joe Stump Facebook page. You know, there's an official fan Facebook page, but most of the posts I'll do on my own Facebook page, whether it's shows, upcoming shows, or that kind of thing. And, you know, so those are all out there.
Yeah, you do a lot of live shows, again, whether solo stuff, you've played in a number of bands, you were on that Axes and Anchors cruise. So if people are seeing you at shows, are you one of those kind of people, do you mingle with the crowd, do you stay away from the crowd, or how approachable are you at shows?
I'm extremely approachable. So anybody comes to a show, yeah, because in addition to my solo thing, like regionally, I have like a Blackpool tribute thing called Black Knight
yep.
Castle, where I play some of my solo stuff and then some Rainbow and Purple. And then I also have a Deep Purple tribute band I play with. And then, you know, and then I have like, I'm in a bunch of different bands with a bunch of European guys, you know, as well. So, you know, I think I'm in like four, you know, like a half dozen bands or whatever. but at shows, anybody wants a picture, anybody wants me to sign something, anybody wants to, you know, talk guitar or whatever, you know, I'm extremely accommodating, you know.
You know, what's sad is that I've been a fan of you for so long, and, you know, I'm here in New England, you're here in New England. I've only seen you live one time, and that was with Holy Hell when you were opening, opening band on Manowar's tour all those years ago. They're in the States here.
Which show was it? How long ago was that?
Oh, this was 2005? During that Manowar's North American tour.
Early.
Yeah, that was like, Holy Hell, I don't even know if you guys had a record out yet.
Yeah, no, that was before the EP. That was a completely different lineup of the band. That's when the band was stinky too.
I mean, I've still got the set list
in comparison to what it actually became. You know, Holy Hell will be back out, you know, and doing some damage this year finally.
Yeah, I remember at that show because I'm like, I'm finally going to get to see Joe Stump live, and it's not even his solo stuff. But hey, at least I get to see him live. And, you know, I went up there, and of course, on your monitor, I swiped the set list after the show. I'm like, I got to familiarize myself with these songs. You did the Rising Force cover. It was like, I never thought I'd see Joe Stump at a Manowar show. Go figure. but having said that, I need to get you here for an in-studio appearance here at WSCA. I got to get you here, take over the WSCA airwaves, you know. Get you to play live on air, it's soloing, and, you know, have you pick the songs that I play on Black Knight Meditations. We got to make that happen, dude. How do I make that happen? How do I get you up here?
I'll be freed up probably in April and May, so maybe we'll have to shoot for something like that.
Yeah, man, plenty of great places to eat here, and, you know, I've had some people, you know, up here before. So you can check with them on that. It's not enough FM radio stations that support this kind of music, but you got one up here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Joe. So I appreciate you calling in tonight, and we're going to keep playing your music, and you keep putting out those killer records, and we'll get you here at the station live on air soon, man. Hey, thanks a lot for calling in, Joe. All right, have a great night.
All right, you too. Thanks a ton for having me on.
All right, absolutely. Keep rocking.